Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
After years of operational and financial difficulty, Transnet is now taking a bold step in its rail reform journey. This week, the state-owned entity issuing what is termed a request for qualification to establish something called LeaseCo. Essentially, it's a rolling stock leasing company aimed at revitalizing South Africa's freight rail sector. But this is my question. Can this new model really level the playing field? Is it going to attract meaningful private investment and fix a freight system that, as we well know, has been a drag on economic performance? Or is this simply a repackaging of old problems in a new language? I'm in conversation now with Yolisa Kani, who's Group Chief Business Development Officer at Transnet. Yolisa, welcome. Thank you very much indeed. What then is the thinking here? What is Transnet's intention?
Look, there are three parts to this initiative, and it's not a new initiative, just by the way. When we first conceptualized it, we're looking at the possibility of diversifying or densifying the North-South Corridor, which is the rail line that goes all the way from South Africa to the DRC, because there's opportunities for cargo southbound and northbound, which is a lost opportunity. But fast forward to where we are today, there are three reasons for this initiative. One, it is to diversify and grow our revenue as Transnet. Your opening remarks are basically where we were about 18 to 24 months ago, where our volumes were on a slippery slide, on a downward trajectory. We then developed what we call a recovery plan. You'll be glad to know that we've stabilized and the volumes are going up. Secondary to that, obviously, we are now reinventing ourselves for growth. So this initiative, first and foremost, is to therefore diversify and grow our revenue by leveraging the capital from the private sector whilst using our stranded assets, which are assets that are not being used. Second to that, and again, it was part of your introductory remark, is to enable the rail reform by making this much sought-after rolling stock available to new train operating companies. You will recall that the infrastructure manager called for any train operating company that would want to take up a slot on the network to do so, and that process was closed at the end of February. 98 companies applied for slots, and that capacity that they envisaged to take up, whether they are successful or not is another conversation, of about 100 million tons. Obviously, if you have access on the network, you will need a rolling stock. So we are hoping to then come to the party with our rolling stock and enable these train operating companies. Again, as I said, these are existing assets, Jeremy. They've just been left stranded and not being utilized. Right. And it's the quickest way of getting rolling stock as opposed to new builds that take anything between 12 to 24 months. And last but not least, obviously, it is to enable regional integration by, again, using the very same assets and making them available to regional train operators. That, again, Jeremy, would then, using our expansive rail network, you know it's about 21,000 kilometers of a rail network, which then connects the hinterland to our very same ports in South Africa, in particular the Port of Richards Bay, right, and the Port of Durban.
So this is a very bullish outlook that you're giving me, but let me ask you this. Why should the private sector trust Transnet again, particularly after years of underperformance and broken infrastructure?
The two things that have happened at Transnet, Jeremy, and numbers don't lie, as I've indicated, I just can't speak to the numbers right now, is that we come from a place where our volumes are on a decline. We come from a place where our ports were struggling with ailing and old port equipment. If you check out in the news, we've now received a lot of equipment in the port of Port Elizabeth. I think it's about 100 straddle carriers that are to be delivered in that port, if not yet delivered. The same in the Port of Cape Town. We've tried to look for a private sector partner in the Port of Durban, but unfortunately that is locked up in a court debacle. Second to that, our volumes have gone up. We've improved. It's a significant improvement from 2 years ago. And the third thing that I'd like to say is that Transnet, for all intents and purposes, is now, I suppose, establishing itself as a business as opposed to a government entity. Government entities get government subsidies, which we don't. We raise our capital by raising debt and from our operations. So I suppose if you look at also most importantly is the stabilization of the leadership as well. So all of those things combined, I think, make us a formidable partner.
You talk about leveling the playing field, yet the private sector might argue that Transnet still controls critical infrastructure. So is this partial liberalization just dressed up as reform?
No, it's a full liberalization rather. I'll tell you why I say that. Transnet Freight Rail used to be responsible for maintaining and managing the network. There has been a full vertical separation. We now have TRIM, which is the Transnet Rail Infrastructure Manager, which is a regulated entity. That's the entity that advertises slots on the network. The very same TFR has had to apply for slots like everybody else. They will now then run the trains like any other train operating company. That's the first one. The second one is TNPA is also in the process of being corporatized. That was supposed to happen by end of March, but we asked for an extension because there are certain things that we still needed to tie up. So it's a full liberalization of freight and logistics, both from a port as well as rail point of view. And again, it's not something that is driven by Transnet. We are participants like everybody else. This is part of the freight and logistics roadmap that was approved by Cabinet about a year or so ago.
One of the problems, though, is that LeaseCo is going to depend on a functioning logistics ecosystem. And you will concede that ports, rail lines and operations still remain vulnerable, one, to sabotage, that's been widely reported in the past, as well as inefficiencies.
100%. But you know what has happened in the past couple of, let's say, 18 months? We have now collaborated with our customers. We no longer call our customers. They are now our partners. Let's give you an example, Jeremy. The challenge that we have with cable theft is a challenge that is being tackled by both ourselves and our customers. We are jointly attacking this unfortunate challenge that is quite pervasive. In some instances, they bring in the drones or they run shifts in the evening whilst we run shifts during daytime. I mean, we have a way of setting those costs. In some cases, it's a payback. In some cases, the customers are more than happy to forgo those costs. We also, through the National Logistics Crisis Committee, which has various work streams. One of those work streams is the safety and security work stream. So the engagements at that level obviously hands over that responsibility to SAPS and the rest of the safety and security driven by other government entities that have the mandate and much more intelligence than we do to handle the situation. So there is a collaborative approach to this. Granted, we have not fully addressed the issue, but it has somehow been reduced. So that's the first part. The second part is, you probably would have seen in the papers that the Minister Barbara Creasy, sent out an RFI to the market to test their appetite, the market's appetite, to jointly invest in the rail infrastructure, whether it's in the form of concessions or JVs, whatever the case may be. Freight and logistics framework, first and foremost, the principle is to say that we need to bring back cargo back on rail, but we understand that government has financial constraints and therefore we're going to be leveraging the private sector to come in and participate. Those two things combined should, and I'm not saying that the matter has gone away, but those things combined should give you comfort that something is being done.
I just need a very quick answer in conclusion. You will guarantee that safeguards are in place to make sure that LeaseCo isn't monopolized by politically connected bidders.
100%. If you read that RFQ, it's quite clear that we're looking for companies that have experience in leasing. They have the financial capability to raise funding. And there are very strict governance structures that we've had to even go through before we went to the market. Jeremy, I would safely say that that era is in the past.
Yolisa Khani, thank you very much indeed. Group Chief Business Development Officer at Transnet.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.